prefatory remarks. Before I start the lecture, I would like to say a few words about why I am doing this. When my father was alive, we seldom spoke about the mountain. All I knew about my father on Mount Rushmore was that he worked for the great sculptor Gutzon Borglum and that he was the chief carver. I knew a few particulars, like it took 14 years to complete, that it began in 1927 and was finished in 1941. That's about all. I got interested in it about 15 years ago. I found out what books bore my father's name. I then ordered them and read with great interest three or four of them. To find out what my father did on the mountain, I went and did extensive research at the Library of Congress and National Archives in Washington, D.C., and found great information about him. The books that I read about him give fairly good information, but the information that I found in Washington, D.C. say great things and go into more detail. I feel that my father didn't receive enough recognition for his work on Rushmore. Now, after all, he was one of the few skilled carvers, also the chief carver, and directed the carving. I hope this lecture will put him in a different light and add to his stature on the mountain. This story is really about a son's revelation of his father's work as a stonecutter and carver on Mount Rushmore and other projects and things. My father's work regarding Rushmore lay dormant and buried in the Library of Congress, and I sort of brought him back to life. This was a journey to the Library of Congress and National Archives in Washington, D.C., to unearth these treasures. When I found a memo about my father, it was like finding gold, and it brought great satisfaction. It was probably the greatest human joy in my life, and I thank God for it. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to an overview lecture on Gutzon Borglum, Mount Rushmore, and Luigi Del Bianco's contribution as chief carver on the mountain. This year marks the 59th anniversary of the completion of Mount Rushmore. The idea for a carving on a gigantic scale belongs to Doane Robinson, state historian of South Dakota in 1923. He was looking for ways and means to attract tourism to South Dakota. In the Black Hills, were sharp granite shafts known as the Needles jutting upward into the sky. He wanted a sculptor to carve Western heroes like Lewis and Clark, Jed Smith, Bill Cody, and Indians like Red Cloud. He first wrote a letter to Laredo Taft, an American sculptor, in December 1923, proposing the idea. But Taft was in bad health and declined the offer. He then sent a letter to Gutzon Borglum at Stone Mountain, Georgia on August the 20th, 1924. This letter was received by Jesse Tucker, an assistant of Borglum. He forwarded the letter to Borglum, who was visiting his home at Stanford. Borglum accepted the offer and sent back a reply to Robinson on August the 28th, 1924. He said he could meet with him sometime in September. On September the 24th, 1924, Gutzon Borglum, with his son Lincoln, took a train to Rapid City, South Dakota, and met with Doane Robinson. They discussed the idea of carvings. Borglum told Robinson that the carvings should be done on a national level, not regional. That way, they would receive more attention and support. Borglum checked the needles and found that the granite was not durable and not suitable for carving. He then proposed the idea of presidential heroes like Washington and Lincoln. Robinson liked the idea, and so the first plan was to carve Washington and Lincoln, and Jefferson and Teddy Roosevelt would come later. On August 13th, 1925, Gutzon Borglum, his son Lincoln, and guide Theodore Shoemaker set out into the Black Hills on horseback to look for a site for carving. It took 2 weeks to find a mountain suitable for carving. The name of the mountain, Mount Rushmore. The first actual drilling on the mountain was October the 4th, 1927. Some of the key men that Borglum brought to South Dakota to implement his plan were Jesse Tucker, an engineer who worked with him at Stone Mountain, Georgia, William Tallman, a pointer who later became superintendent, Hugo Villa, an Italian sculptor who was in charge of the carving at one time, and Alton Hoot Leach, a pointer. There were, of course, the men of South Dakota who were the drillers. The first head or face to be dedicated was George Washington on July the 4th, 1930. When each figure was dedicated, it was in a rough stage. The eyes, the nose, and the mouth were visible, but much refinement was needed to complete the figure. The next face to be dedicated was Thomas Jefferson on August the 30th, 1936. President Franklin Roosevelt was on hand for the unveiling. Lincoln was dedicated on September the 17th, 1937, and Teddy Roosevelt on July the 5th, 1939. Now I would like to speak on the one man most responsible for the success of Mount Rushmore, Gutzon Borglum, one of America's most famous sculptors. Without Gutzon Borglum, it is very, very safe to say there would not have been any Mount Rushmore. He was born on March 25th, 1867, in Bear Lake, Idaho. His father was a doctor. He attended public schools and his parents sent him to St. Mary's College, a Catholic boarding school in Kansas. He painted and displayed artistic talent at St. Mary's. He was interested in Western subjects like horses, cowboys, and Indians. In 1890, Borglum went to Paris to study at the Julian Academy and the École des Beaux-Arts. While in Paris, he became a close friend of Auguste Rodin, one of the world's great sculptors of all time. Up until he was about 34 years of age, most of his work was done in painting. He then turned to sculpture and won a gold medal at the St. Louis Exposition for his Mares of Diomedes in bronze. After 1910, he painted very little. Some of his great works include the 12 Apostles and many other characters, including angels for the Cathedral of St. John in New York City. This was done in 1905. In 1907, he did a large head of Lincoln, which for many years was in the rotunda at the Capitol in Washington, D.C. I was there a few times and I saw it. It's not really in the rotunda anymore, it's in a different section. But it's still very beautiful wherever it is. In 1911, he did a seated Lincoln in bronze in Newark, New Jersey. My father worked with him on that. Borglum sculpted the Wars of America Memorial, 42 figures in bronze, also in Newark, New Jersey. My father helped him with that in a mechanical way. Of course, he was also the sculptor at Stone Mountain, but due to a fallout with the Ladies' Committee, he never completed the project. It was done by another sculptor. That has been completed, by the way, by an artist called Hancock. Borglum was a contemporary of great American sculptors like Augustus St. Gaudens, Daniel Chester French, the one that did the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, George Gray Barnard, and Frederick McMonies. Borglum was rated not great, but exceptionally good by the art critics of his time. He was a dynamic personality, a great talker, and had great, great charisma. He was honest, blunt. He had many friends and enemies. He was thoroughly American, bold and imaginative. When it came to sculpture, he thought on a grand and large scale. In 1933, a skilled carver was employed. His name was Luigi Del Bianco, my father. He was hired to assist in the refinement of the faces. He was employed in 1933, 1935, 1936, and 1940. His work records at Rushmore do not list the year 1940. I did some extensive research at the Library of Congress and National Archives of my father and found out that he was there in 1940. I also found some very important information regarding his work at Rushmore. My father's association with Gutzon Borglum dates back to 1920. He was employed as a marble cutter in Barre, Vermont, and was introduced to Gutzon Borglum by my uncle Alfonso Scaffa, who also was a stone cutter and did some work for Borglum. Their association lasted until the death of Mr. Borglum on March 6, 1941. I do not have any information on my father's work at the Stanford Studio, but I know he worked at Stone Mountain, the Wars of America in Newark, and of course Mount Rushmore. How many men were employed on Mount Rushmore? About 360 to 400 men were employed at Rushmore. One source says there was 360, and another source said it quoted 400 men. Most of them were cast-off miners from South Dakota. They worked at the Homestake Mine in South Dakota. Some of the men came from the East, like William Tallman, Giles Montgomery, Matt Riley, who, by the way, is alive and living in Stamford, Connecticut. He's 89 years old, and of course, my father. What kind of positions were held by the men on the mountain? There were laborers, call men, engineers, carvers, pointers, a face man, and a superintendent. The pay ranged from 50 cents an hour for a laborer to the chief carver position of $1.50 an hour. My father held top pay on the mountain. The men worked 6 days a week from 7 in the morning in the summer, 7:30 in the fall and winter till 4 p.m. The men worked very hard, had to contend with a lot of granite dust. They had to walk up 506 steps to get to the top of the mountain. Imagine every morning walking all those steps to the top of the mountain. I would have been tired after the 30th step. Then they were put into bosun's chairs on top of the mountain and let down on the mountain to the face that they were working. It was dangerous and harrowing. Imagine being suspended in a chair cage 400 to 500 feet in the air. Some of the men that worked at Rushmore a long time were the Peterson brothers, Howdy and Merrill. They were there a good 10 years. Howdy was a mechanic and Merrill went from driller to assistant carver. Another great worker was Red Anderson. He also was a driller. Awarded to that, worked under my father. Most of the men that were employed on the mountain were unskilled. The ones that weren't skilled at any, at some form of art were, of course, sculptor Vetsen Borglum and his son Lincoln, Hugo Vila, William Tallman, Joe Bruner, a stonecutter, and Luigi Del Bianco. Most of the carvers that worked with my father were men that were taught on the job the process of carving. How was the mountain carved? There were four steps that explained the process of carving. It went from drilling, blasting by dynamite, carving, and finishing. The men that did the drilling probably did not know exactly where they were going when they started drilling. They knew they were going from one point to another. They knew they were removing very large amounts of stone, and at a certain point, the carvers would take over and start the finishing. Gutzon Borglum, the sculptor designer, was the most important man on the mountain. He designed the models of the four faces in a studio at the bottom of the mountain. The second most important position on the mountain was that of the pointers. Their job was to calculate the measurements of the models and transfer them to the mountain. The third most important position was that of the chief carvers and his assistants. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of this lecture. I want to thank Rosaria Kulesa for inviting me to this lecture, and also the Circolo da Vinci. I want to thank the Mirangelo restaurant for the use of this room. And that's it. And now I'd like to read you some of the memos and some of the material that I found at the Library of Congress and the National Archives. I found most of this at the Library of Congress and just a little at the archives. October the 10th, 1933. First of all, this is written by Gutzon Borglum to my father. Luigi Del Bianco, chief carver, in charge of all close drilling and carving. Your duty is to give all your attention and study to the carving of the Jefferson head and removing the stone between the Jefferson head and the Washington head. Unless Mr. Borglum designates your assistant drillers, you may choose your helpers. But make no change after you have begun with your men without consulting Mr. Borglum. You must plan your work 4 to 6 days ahead and have all points made at least 4 days ahead of drilling. You are responsible for the manner of drilling and the amount of stone taken off and the size of the explosions. If and when casts are needed, 1 week's notice to Ivan is necessary. Ivan, referring to Ivan Hauser, who worked in the studio. Give your orders ahead of time to ensure no delays. All requests for tools and material should be made directly to Mr. Borglum. signed Gutzon Borglum, sculptor and engineer. Next one is June the 9th, 1933. This is related, this is from Lincoln, from Gutzon Borglum to John Boland, who was the business manager on the mountain. I expected to see you last evening, and I'm leaving now in a few minutes. I am writing on this order sheet to show you that all work on the mountain will in future be under written constructions, whether to Tallman, Lincoln, or Bianco, so that there will be no confusion or crossing of wires. I have all men, Lincoln, Billy, and Bianco, to strictest confidence regarding their separate duties or tasks, and there will be no delay nor confusion. The work now will go straight into large sculpture work. Every foot measured and no more guesswork blasting, and each man knows his job and responsibilities. You will be surprised as the efficiency and result of work from now on. We know our stone now and its faults. There has been no direct sculpture work on this mountain, as I now term it, since the Washington head was cut. I mean to avoid expensive timber scaffold wherever possible. But work now must be accurate, and men require solid footing to do accurate work. This none of them have had much experience with. We'll get back as quickly as possible, and we'll fly up if necessary. Sincerely, Gutzon Borglum, sculptor and engineer. July 30th, 1935. William Tallman, he was the superintendent of the mountain. Please post this in the dining room for the men. All drilling of all kinds, roughing, finishing, and carving of features must be directed by the chief stone carver on the work and his directions followed. The chief carver will be held responsible for the ways and the means for removing and finishing the sculptor. No work must be put in hand for drilling or finishing concurred in by the pointer chief and the sculptor. The carver chief will select from the drillers the most experienced men for finishing. I have appointed Luigi Bianco for this most important task. He will call upon the pointers to supply at call any points necessary to carry on the work, and Arthur Johnson, foreman of the job on the mountain, will give him immediate assistance in the supply of men, tools, scaffolding, and in advance of needs. You notice he put down, I have appointed Luigi Bianco. He didn't say Del Bianco. My father, Mr. Borglum, always referred to my father affectionately, just as Bianco. He was known as Bianco on the mountain, not Luigi or Del Bianco, Bianco. That was signed by Gutzon Borglum. This is in 1933 or 1935. I couldn't detect what year it was. June 3rd. Again to Mr. Boland. My dear Mr. Boland, I've had a little talk with Bianco this evening. He was a little discouraged because I had told him he was to receive the same wages up to this time that I came, and from that date he was to receive 90 cents per hour. This has not been paid him. It is impossible to push this Washington figure to completion with the untrained men we have. Bianco has all of Villa's ability, plus power and honesty and dependability. We could double our progress if we could have two like Bianco. Now I have decided we must keep Bianco, keep him happy. If he was working for me, I'd be paying him $11 or $12. I want him to receive $1 an hour. You may charge me with the difference. The help he is, the ability to understand, is worth much more to me, is worth much more to this work. I shall take him to Stone Mountain with me next winter, which only means he knows this kind of work, and there are no trained men in this work except such as I have trained. Please give him the difference from the date of this talk, and as I say, charge the difference to me. Very sincerely, Gutzon Borglum. Now, to go over this memo a little, he says that Bianco has all of, everything in the mountain was usually about money. You know, they all wanted more money than workers. And my father wanted more, of course. Now, he also says about Bianco has all of Villa's ability. Now, Villa was Hugo Villa, the Italian sculptor who preceded my father as the chief carver. He had a fallout with Mr. Borglum. When they did the original, we know there were two Jeffersons on the mountain. And when he did the original, it was on, when you look at the mountain to the left of Washington, now when you look at the mountain, it's to the right. The finished product is to the right of Washington. Now, Hugo Villa was a sculptor, and he was a very good sculptor. He worked for Borglum for many years. He was his protege. Did a lot of work for him. Now, what he's trying to tell Mr. Boland that Bianco has all of Villa's ability, but he also has, that Villa doesn't have really, power, honesty, and dependability. Then we could double our progress so we could have two like Bianco. Don't get me wrong, Villa was a very good man. The next one is a report to the mountain about everything that was going on in the mountain. How far they were going along in there, how things were going. And I found my father in this. This is probably the greatest thing that I ever found about him. I won't read all of you. I'll just read the part where my father comes in. In 1933, I notified Tallman and my son Lincoln. Now, Tallman was the superintendent, and Lincoln, his son, was the chief pointer, that I was bringing with me an assistant, a semi-sculptor who had been with me on and off in the East for 12 years, a powerful, capable granite man whom I had converted into an efficient marble cutter. I knew right then and there that was my father, because I know my father was there in 33, and he worked in the East for 12 years. I knew it was my father immediately. I was immediately notified that his presence here was objected to and that the Rapid City office did not want him. I ignored this and put him immediately in charge of the work and the workman on Washington's head, meaning the face and wig. As you can see by this paragraph, the only way I can read into it is that they were prejudiced, probably because he was an Italian. And you know, in those days, there was a lot of prejudice, especially in the West. He complained to me within a week of the treatment he was being accorded from the Rapid City office. Rudeness, insolence, and petty dickering about wages. He remained here on my orders and my account, but he will never come again. He will, however, form one of my headmen at Stone Mountain. Now, what I'm going to read next to you is tremendous, wonderful information about my father. Here's what Mr. Borglum had to say about him. He is worth any three men I could find in America for this particular type of work here and now. But Mount Rushmore is not managed that way and doesn't want that kind of service. He entirely outclassed everyone on the hill, and his knowledge was an embarrassment to their amateur efforts and lack of knowledge, lack of experience, and lack of judgment. He's the only man besides myself who has been on this work, who knows the problems and how to instantly solve them. His absence is a great loss to the work this year. You know, after I read that, I was almost positive it was my father, but still I didn't read his name. So I read on more and more, and when you come toward the end of it, it says, the loss of Bianco, when he was summing things up, in other words, he said, the loss of Bianco will probably prevent the finishing of Washington and Jefferson heads this year. Then I knew it was my father, and it made me very, very happy. Just a few more. I'll just give you the highlights of some of these readings. I highlighted them in yellow. Bianco, as you know, is back, and his presence emphasizes the frightful handicap this work labors under. He's the only intelligent, efficient stone carver on the work who understands the language of the sculptor. There are only two men on the entire job who come to us as master workmen. Those are Bianco Carver, trained by me for the past 12 years in the East, and our blacksmith, a master at his job. Here's another good one. For the purpose of Washington's red tape, a portion of our better men are designated as carvers. There are no carvers on this mountain. There never has been but one, and he refused to return because of the chronic sabotage directed at him by influences in Rapid City and the Park Department. Now, Borgen was talking about, he gave it, the plans for the remaining approximate 2 months of good weather are to finish completely the face of Washington with all refinements of expression, this work being in the hands of Mr. Borglum and the one stone carver on the work, Bianco. Now, this used to come up once in a while in the memos that I, the information I was gathering, this term, this phrase, refinements of expression. I thought that to mean the last stages, the last things on the mountain. In the absence of a highly trained, competent executive who knows sculpture, I yesterday posted an order dividing the responsibility of the work under two or three trained minds that I've had on the mountain, placing the removal of all granite, methods of removal, form and use of tools on the Bianco, all measurements of every kind whatsoever, and the full responsibility of faults and measurements not provided for drillers on Lincoln. Handling the work, preparing the scaffolds, providing tools under Johnson, ability to remain as general aid to all and special assistant to Lincoln. He asked for that. I have given orders that no powder shall be used or shots fired that not approved by both Bianco and Lincoln. Then he says at the end, as far as I am concerned, I shall let Bianco go. I'm not going to make up his wages nor the wages of anybody else. I have spent the last money that I shall spend running into many, many thousands for the sole purpose of lifting a standard here, a burden I should never have had to carry and cannot continue. And here comes the next powerful statement. His leaving will stop all work on the features of Washington and Jefferson. He met my father. I returned Bianco to his work this morning as chief carver and granite expert at $1.50 per hour. He will have complete charge of the practical ways and means of dealing with the finesse of carving and instructing the other carvers in the ways and means of handling this particular stone. Questions that people may ask. Question: how much did Rushmore cost? Answer: according to Gilbert Feit, author of Mount Rushmore, it cost $989,992.32. Question 2. How many years did it take to complete Mount Rushmore? The answer: the first drilling was October the 4th, 1927, and final drilling was October the 31st, 1941. That's around 14 years. But if you add up just the months they worked, I think it was 78 months. That comes to 6.5 years. What is the size of the figures on Mount Rushmore? Each head is 60 feet from the top of the head to the chin. Each nose is 20 feet long, each mouth is 18 feet wide, and each eye is 11 feet wide.